Greetings, Scotch Potatoes, across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Michael Neal, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. That was probably one of the most boisterous and professional-sounding introductions I've had in a long time, so I do appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much. I am a film professional, so to speak, so film I take pride in my work.
Sounds great. Yeah, Michael's a new guest, and we'll talk to him in a little bit, in just a second here, and find out who he is, because I'm sure there's some stories to go along with that. But before we do that, let's go ahead and get through some paperwork. You're, of course, listening to Fat Guys at the Movies radio show and podcast. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and listen to us and our other feeds on the entire Fat Guys network, which includes movie reviews and DVD spots. And we just had a second reel episode where we ripped apart the movie Chronicle. Because I didn't like that. But no more on that. You can listen more about that for about 40 minutes on our second reel episode. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys Network or Fat Guys or Fat Guys in the Movies. We pop right up along with all of our other shows. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM. That's FGATM for Fat Guys in the Movies. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. We have another email this week that we're going to read during the middle segment. You can also give us a call on a voicemail, 740-205-6456. All we've gotten are creditors and people trying to sell us stuff.
Ooh. So maybe we're not some new sheds those. Or something.
Sheds? So I could be like Arthur Two Sheds Jackson?
Yeah, exactly.
See, did you get that joke?
No, I didn't. I just said exactly. Oh, but
doggone. It's an old Monty Python sketch. It's a really obscure Monty Python's Flying Circus sketch.
Ooh, I'll have to check it out. I love those guys.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, Michael, tell us a little bit about yourself, because you're a brand new guest. We met each other a little more than a year ago at the Horror Hound Weekend in Cincinnati, I think, either Cincinnati or Dayton.
Yeah, it was Cincy.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about yourself. You do film-ish thingies.
Yes, I do film-ish thingies. I'm an independent filmmaker from Boston. When I met you, I was wearing a rubber mask and a lab coat promoting Infinite Santa 8000, which is...
I still have no idea what you look like, by the way.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, I'm very tall. I have a lot of tattoos and a beard, so at a horror convention, I look just like everybody else.
You just blend right in there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sort of like me, I'm a fat guy with a beard. When I go to, like, Comic-Con, I'm just in a sea of fat men with beards.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so Infinite Santa 8000, it's a web series on YouTube. It's free, as is everything on YouTube. Yeah. And it's about Santa Claus fighting mutants in the year 8000. It's just as goofy as it sounds, but it actually has a somewhat serious side to it, too. Or
it's
more
a
of
documentary,
a heart,
right? Documentary?
Yes, of course. We just went to the year 8000 and just sat down and started filming. And it's really, the content just came to us. So, you know, that's the way things go. And yeah, so that's an animated web series, like I said. And it's kind of a sci-fi action-adventure kind of thing with a horror twist. We're actually making a movie version out of it right now, which is pretty exciting. And that's going to be a feature-length version with more action, more gore, more everything. And I also directed a horror movie called Drive-In Horror Show. I'm from Boston, so for me it's Drive-In Horror Show. But there's no R's in that, so Horror Show. And that's available on DVD through Midnight Releasing. It's an anthology horror film, you know, I'm just going
to... Remember, you're talking to the rest of the world here, not just Bostonians here.
I know. Well, I don't have an accent except for the word horror, which is funny, but at any rate, it's an anthology-style film like Creepshow. It's five terrifying tales to quench your thirst for horror. So there you go. It's out on DVD. You can find out all that stuff at driveinhorrorshow.com.
Awesome. Yeah, we will talk a little bit more about that in the middle segment, because you were kind enough to send me a copy of it, and yeah, I had a chance to watch it, which is good, because I have to watch so many things. I was able to squeeze that in, which was kind of nice to see. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. And now, we were talking off the air. I used to do independent filmmaking, so I know what a tough gig that is. It's sort of like being an actor, where people think, oh, you want to be an actor in the limelight and everything, and I'm like, that's like the teeniest tiny sliver, you know, the Brad Pitts and Julia Roberts of the world. That's just this teeny tiny sliver, lots of luck and lots of being in the right place at the right time. I mean, Brad Pitt would like to think that he made his own destiny happen. he was just a lucky SOB.
Oh yeah, and you see that from, you know, like I said, anybody that has that kind of success, you know, and there is talent involved usually.
Oh sure,
but yeah, no, it's not necessarily an easy path, but I've been dedicated to do it ever since I got out of college and realized that, unlike a lot of jobs, there's not a clear ladder to climb to get to do your own independent horror films and animation. Yeah. So I kind of just found my own way and worked on a lot of little projects along the way, some of which were fun, some of which were, you know, wedding videos and crappy production assistant gigs and all that. But, but you know, it's been really worth it, and I couldn't really ask for anything else I'd like to do.
Yeah. It's always nice. I figured this out once, and I said this to somebody. And you know how people say, and you know this from independent film, you can either you can pick one of two out of the three. You can have it fast, cheap, and good. You can't have two of those, but you can't have all three.
Right, right. That's, you know, definitely right.
And it's sort of the same way with what you do for a living. You can have money, career, and family, and it's even more restrictive because you can pick two, but you can't just pick career and money. Or you can't, I'm sorry, you can't pick like family and money unless you're like born into it, like a trust fund kid.
Right.
So if you're going to pick career, your career, you have to choose between your family and being happy. I kind of lump those together. Or just making a lot of money, because you can make a lot of money and have a very high paying job. But it may not. You may have to have a lot of sacrifices in what you really want to do with your life and having your family. And what I do, doing the movie review stuff, I've chosen this as my career, and it doesn't make a whole lot of money, but I'm much happier. It offers me a lot of time with my kids, and it offers me what I consider to be more important than just making boatloads of cash.
It's very satisfying, you know, mm-hmm. from the independent film standpoint, which is very similar to what you were describing. It's nice. I mean, I can't imagine, like I said, being in a different industry or committing to do commercial film all the time. I've done a lot and I don't mind, and I know people that love it, but it's just mm-hmm. not for me. I'm just, my mind starts to wander and I daydream and, you know, wonder what would happen if the wedding video I'm filming, you know, there was a slasher that busted in and started cutting people up and stuff like that. You
what
know?
Would happen if the zombie apocalypse happened at this wedding?
Yeah, which actually seems to be the trailer for Rec 3. So
yeah, okay.
Which looks awesome.
That should be awesome.
Yes.
Well, we should probably go and at least mention our movies here really quick,
because
we've got a little bit of time left in this segment. The first one for this week is The Vow. Channing Tatum and Rachel McAdams fall in love. She gets in a car crash, and he helps her heal.
Life's all about moments of impact and how they change our lives forever. What if one day you could no longer remember any of them?
Kate, you're in the hospital. You were in a car accident.
Was anyone else hurt, doctor?
Hey, you know who I am, right?
Yeah, you're my doctor.
Now, are you a Channing Tatum or Rachel McAdams? Well, I mean, everyone likes Rachel McAdams because she's a hottie.
Yeah, she's awesome.
But she's been in some bad movies.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I don't really know that much about Channing Tatum, honestly. I mean, I like dramas. I don't find myself watching as many of them. So I don't have that much to say about him, you know.
Okay. Well, you know what? We're right up against a break, so let's take a break here. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit about The Vow. Not too much, I promise.
Hey, welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies.
I'm
your resident skinny guy, actually.
That's right, you're not a fat. You're a guy, but you're just
I am a guy.
Although if you were a lot shorter and the same weight, you'd be fat.
This is true. I am quite tall. I'm 6'2".
Oh, my Lord.
And, yeah. Yeah, no, if you took me and squished me to maybe 5 feet tall or 4'11 or something, I'd definitely be very different in terms of my body size.
Well, there's a famous line from Garfield the cat, and he always says I'm not fat, I'm not overweight, I'm under tall. Now, now for me, I apparently should be 7.5 feet tall.
Well, keep working on it. You might get there.
Yeah, maybe eventually. We'll see.
Yeah.
We're talking a little bit about The Vow. What's funny is the trailers for The Vow mention two Nicholas Sparks movies. They say Rachel McAdams from The Notebook and Channing Tatum from Dear John. They don't say Channing Tatum from Haywire or G.I. Joe or anything else that he's done in the world. It's they go to the Nicholas Sparks movie. This is, in fact, not a Nicholas Sparks movie, but it looks like it's trying to be one. Mm-hmm. And I don't like Nicholas Sparks movies. I don't know if there's a guarantee that somebody's going to die in this movie, which is what happens in a Nicholas Sparks film.
I have never seen a Nicholas Sparks movie, if you can believe that.
I can believe it, and I encourage that. I would not change that one bit if I were you. I cannot give this a preemptive suck because they did screen it. We're just recording this a little before my screening of it. So you can come back to the Fat Guys Network and check out what I specifically said about this, but I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah, the one piece of insight I found on IMDb is that director Michael Suski, Sucsy, was a PA on Deep Impact.
Wow, well, that means nothing.
It means absolutely nothing, but I thought it was kind of interesting, so I figured I'd mention it.
It's like he got Mimi Leader coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, yeah, so I'm not looking forward to this one, but we'll see what happens. I've been known to be, you know, my expectations are sometimes different. I might watch this movie and be like, that was really sweet. I don't expect that to happen, though.
Well, you never know.
The next movie we're going to talk about, which I also have not seen because there are conflicting screenings this week, at that safe house in which Denzel Washington and Ryan Reynolds go head-to-head as CIA agents.
He was one of the most brilliant CIA operatives we ever had until he went rogue. He's responsible for the deaths of multiple agents. This guy's just not going to walk into an American consulate without good reason.
Remember rule number one, you're responsible for your house guest. I'm your house guest. They're here for me, but they want me alive. You don't kill. Time's a wasting.
Are you into this kind of movie?
Oh, yeah. The trailer looks awesome. I'm into almost any kind of movie, but I do have a soft spot for action, kind of, you know, looks like a kind of crime thriller. All that kind of stuff, or FBI, I don't know, all that stuff kind of mixes together, honestly. But it looks pretty cool. You know, it looks a little, they're trying to market it like Training Day a little bit, I think, from Denzel's character.
Yeah, he's a bit of a gray character. He's not, it's not the heroic Denzel necessarily.
Right.
But
which I think he plays well. I think he's good as a badass, or excuse me.
Well, it's out there.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
But no, it's, you know, I don't know. Here's the thing that concerns me about Safe House is I've seen the trailer several times.
Mm-hmm, me too.
I couldn't tell you what it's about right now. And well, it's not just
because I was struggling with the description.
Yeah. Well, because isn't it's just I remember a lot of real Tony Scott esque kind of filters put over them. Mm-hmm. And he gets out of handcuffs at one point.
Yes.
That's pretty much what the movie's about, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the DP shot the Bourne films, so, I mean, you never know, because a lot of how a film looks has to do with what the director wants. And
well, and the Bourne films were very pushed by Greengrass's, you know, handheld style.
Right. Right. So who knows? I mean, I guess all you can hope for is that the guy knows what he's doing. I'm not a huge fan of the first two Bourne films. I just don't like the editing, but they're very well done. I mean, it's really well shot.
Yeah.
Really well shot, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see because this looks like it could be good, but there's a whole bunch of things kind of... It's pulling in both directions because on one hand, I'm like, well, it looks like a fun little action movie and it looks like it's going to be, you know, kind of neat and pretty gritty. But on the other hand, you're like, well, it's being released in early February.
I know.
It's
not
got
a good sign.
Ryan Reynolds in it. And, you know, never heard of this director before. So, I mean, there's certain things that are floating. So I missed seeing this movie because I saw the next movie we're going to talk about. I had to make a choice because they were at the same time. So I'll be catching this one at midnight on Thursday. So we'll see.
Good luck.
So I can't actually give a rating on this one, but I can on the next one. Let's move ahead to the next one. That is Journey to the Mysterious Island. And this is the sequel to the 2008 Journey to the Center of the Earth, which finds The Rock and Josh Hutcherson and The Rock's pecs discovering a mysterious island.
I love The Rock.
A few nights ago, a radio signal got sent out from these coordinates. It could be the mysterious island that Jules Verne wrote about.
You think you're going to travel halfway around the world and meet up with some lunatic who's messing around on ham radio?
It's not some lunatic. It's my grandfather.
He's been looking for Mysterious Island for over half of his life.
This is heaven. I'm checking in.
This is amazing.
Well, don't just stand there.
Grandpa!
Who's up for an adventure?
You know, I like The Rock, too. And he's way more involved in this than you initially think. Because he's a producer on it, and he like actually sings a song on the soundtrack, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
I've always enjoyed him. He's one of the few people that I think can... He was able to go out of wrestling and become a leading man without... Like, John Cena's tried to do it, but he just still looks goofy.
It's tough. It's really tough. Yeah. You have to, and the thing about him when he was on wrestling is that he had the personality.
Yeah.
And that's really what you need.
But he's not just a big... I mean, he's a muscly guy, but he's not like, you know, all neck and arms and a raisin for the head. I mean, he is...
Right.
He's a good-looking dude. He's got a lot of charisma, and he's not a bad little actor or big actor. You know?
I mean, oh, yeah. Remember when he was on SNL and he was far and away the most interesting wrestler? It was when a whole bunch of them were on. I think Triple H was on.
Yeah.
Couple other guys, and he was really surprising at how good he was.
Yeah, he's got a great knack for timing and comedy, and what's neat about here's the thing, I like Journey to the Center of the Earth, the first one. It's a total kids movie, and that's what
was.
This one, my kids were wildly dying to see it, and I ended up being able to take both of my two oldest kids. My youngest, he's 3 and a half, he would have been gotten bored halfway through. But I took my two kids, and they were so excited to see it, and we saw it, and it's one of those movies. Look, I'll tell you, it is the dumbest, stupidest story and character that you will ever see on a movie screen. But doggone it, if I didn't love this movie. I had a lot of fun watching it. It reminded me of what I felt when I saw, and this movie bombed, but The Land of the Lost.
Right, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, and that one got a little raunchier, and that was my only problem. That's, I think, what hurt Land of the Lost more, is they went for the more raunchy drug humor at times. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they would have kept it and made it in that spirit of the original Land of the Lost, it was just a lot of fun. That's what this reminded me of the original Land of the Lost show, with much better special effects, but with the same level of intelligence. Hmm. But it's the same level of fun. You know, I mean, they're going to this island, and they've got tiny elephants and giant bees, and there's not story and characters, really not good, but you know what, they just muscle through the plot and characters that you're sitting there watching, and you're like, well, it makes no sense why they're on this island, but they got there, and I wasn't really questioning it too much as I was going along, even though it was completely ridiculous and stupid. So it works at what it is, and it's a fun, exciting movie, and I laughed. Luis Guzman, you know, Greendale Community College, Human Beings Represent.
Yeah,
you know, he was there, and he's hilarious in it. And Vanessa Hudgens is in it, and she, you know, she's not, I mean, she's pretty, but not a great actor, but she works in the role.
I think there's a lot to be said for a good popcorn flick. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes they get pushed aside as inferior to dramas somehow, and
yeah.
I think it's the same kind of spectrum. There's a lot to be said for not being bored to tears.
Yeah,
you know, and subjected to someone that, I mean, drama is very subjective, I guess, but I'm not a big fan of dramas where it seems like all everyone does is shout or brood or do all these things that have no nuance.
Well, and this is a great kind of movie to have at this time of year when we have when you have the Oscars coming up, and we've just gotten out of award season. And so you got all these heavy movies, and they're good movies, but
sure.
I get so tired at the end of December and early January when you're just watching movies like Albert Nobbs, which is a good film, but you're just like, oh God, another drama, you know. And it's fun to watch this movie. It's a kids movie, and it's a young kids movie. It's like I said, it's totally stupid, but it's a lot of fun, and I found myself laughing at it and enjoying it. So I'm going to actually say, I'm going to give this a rocks. Me and my kids, we loved it. So there you go. With that, we're going to go to another break.
All right.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are now in the infamous middle segment. Now, Michael, you can swear in this one. You can say badass now.
Oh, fuck yeah.
You dropped that in there and you're like, oh, oops, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. I tried to be good, but.
That's okay. People have done that. Actually, I had somebody on. I think I told the story a couple weeks ago, but Marco Cerritos, who was on, gosh, probably 4 or 5 months ago, he was doing the show and he dropped an F bomb in the radio segment, and I go, oh, you can't say that. He's like, oh shit! I'm like, you can't say that either.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it happens. That'll get bleeped out of the radio segment, but you know, people on the internet can hear it all. All
right.
Let's really quickly. We're gonna hit the next movie. Which is something I've been wildly looking forward to. I'm somewhat ashamed to say, but I am. And that is Star Wars Episode One in 3D. It's the first episode of the Star Wars prequels in 3D. What else were you expecting?
The greatest saga of all time is coming to the big screen. In spectacular 3D.
You refer to the prophecy of the one who will bring balance to the Force. You believe it's this boy?
At last we will reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last we will have revenge.
Oh my!
I am a Star Wars whore. I just want to just get that out there. I'm an absolute whore for Star Wars.
I grew up with the originals.
Yeah.
I fall into line with what a lot of people think about the prequels. I don't know that they're the end of the world exactly, but I'm glad you're psyched to see it. Put it that way.
See, for me, I was 5 when the first one came out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's literally what I grew up with. I mean, when I was... I don't remember much about a world before Star Wars because I was relatively young then.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up with it. And yes, I will admit the sequels have problems. Or the prequels have problems. The sequels have problems. Go back and watch Return of the Jedi. And
it's not very good.
Serious problems.
Yeah.
As much as everybody loves Empire, there's problems with Empire. You got to look past it. And I remember what it was like in the late 70s and in the early 80s as a child. Being marketed to with this stuff.
Yep, I do too.
Same goddamn thing happened in 1999. It's just that people grew up and they're like, oh, this is stupid. And I'm like, yeah, but you know what? When it was 1983, I fucking loved the Ewoks.
Yeah, it's true. I'm 35, so I was 6 when Jedi came out. So okay. I saw that in the theater. The other ones I'd seen on TV a bunch. You know, I had the videos and all that. So I grew up with the same kind of world. There's just the toys everywhere. I still have my Rancor monster. You know, it's behind me, actually, you know, so I loved all that stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's I know, Jar Jar is annoying. Yes. Jake Lloyd is a terrible actor.
Yeah. Bad choice.
You know, this movie has silliness and bad dialogue. But you know what? I'm so looking forward to this movie. As the people who see me on Twitter and on Facebook, they see I've Darth Mauled my face. I am crazy excited for this. I actually showed the first three. Well, the first three movies, you know, episode 4, 5, and 6 to my kids. So I'm going to take them. I'm taking them out of school on Friday, and we're going to go see it. Because I am crazy excited for it. And I'm going to love it. And people will be like, oh, Naboo, it's stupid. And they have the racist guys running the ship in the blockade. I'm like, I know all of that. I don't care. I feel like the people who flocked the theater in 2008 to go see Transformers, or 2009 to go see Transformers 2, which was an absolute piece of pile of dog shit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but the fans who just love those movies, you know, hey, that's cool. So, I am the teenage girl going to see Twilight at this point.
Hey, fair enough, man. So, yeah. You know, I think that's fine. I think that's totally fine.
Yeah, I'm just looking for. I want to see. And people, I was talking to somebody, and they said, "Oh yeah, well, like, no scene in a movie should be 45 minutes long in the pod races." And I'm like, "Yeah, but you know what? When I heard they were making this in 3D, I'm going to be like, fucking pod race."
Yeah, that does sound pretty awesome.
So yeah, I'm just looking forward to this. I love Star Wars so much, and I'm unapologetically, and I also defend Lucas, because as much as everyone just like hates Lucas. You know why I like Lucas? Because he doesn't give a shit with people. He's the honey badger. He doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, I think you're right. That Transformers analogy is pretty good. I think part of it is that, like you said, it was growing up in the environment of Star Wars was just so... We'll put it this way. Of all the films I saw as a kid,
yeah,
the only one that I felt like I could actually reach out and maybe actually live in the world it created...
Yeah.
Was Star Wars. The other ones, it's like, you know, you watch Battlestar Galactic or something, or even Last Starfighter, which is great. It's like, yeah, it's a movie. It's like Star Wars is real, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's funny, it's been quite a few years since I had seen the original trilogy. I mean, I'm talking, it's been a long time. I mean, really? We're talking like 7-8 years since I've watched them. I used to watch them a lot.
Yeah.
And I showed them to my kids. And as I'm watching it as a 40-year-old man, as a parent, as somebody who knows how marketing works and somebody who reviews movies, because when I first showed it to my – I once tried to show it to my son who was way too young to see it because he just got bored with it. But knowing how movies are and being a critic for a living, I watched Star Wars and I'm like, yeah, I can see where it's a little bit silly and goofy. And you know, even the first one, as great as that first one is. And I'm not talking about the special edition stuff that got changed. I'm just talking about the universe and the movie itself. But there's a magic to it for me. So
yeah. Hey, that's cool.
I'm going to be sitting there right in the dead center of the theater, shoving popcorn in my face and loving every minute of it. So
hey, I mean, I'll be there once they get to A New Hope. You know, I have no problem with them re-releasing these things. You know, good for him. You know, and good for the fans. I mean, they make tons of money. You're not the only person that feels that way. So,
oh yeah,
awesome.
Well, and it's funny because when everyone bitched about the special editions, my only problem, and I talked about this with Emily and Tevria a couple weeks ago, and she made a good point. The problem with this, my only real problem is kind of with her with the special editions is not that they changed the movies. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with him tinkering. It's just, especially if you look at the older versions, and I haven't actually seen the new versions of them, but the effects do seem very incongruous mm-hmm. with the really liquidy digital effects versus the very linear and hard-edged models and paints and stuff like that. So,
yep.
But you know what? I'm gonna go see all six movies. This is the only movie that's being re-released as a 3D conversion that I'm at all interested in seeing. I didn't go see The Lion King. I love Beauty and the Beast. I did not go see it in 3D.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna go see Titanic in 3D.
I didn't like seeing Titanic the first time.
I like Titanic. I thought Titanic was a good movie. I just don't want
to
see it again.
I don't know. I heard people comparing it to Gone with the Wind, and it's as long as Gone with the Wind. But
no, Gone with the Wind's an hour longer. Gone with the Wind's like 4 hours. Yeah.
It felt like it was 4 hours. It's, I mean, technically, it's amazing. I'm a James Cameron fan, especially sure. as someone that's, you know, done some action sequences myself, and not many, nothing on the scale of his. But it's like, yeah. you know, I compare. I mean, his scenes are the gold standard that I try to, you know, achieve. And I think everyone who has a sense, you know, any kind of reasonable sense, who's a filmmaker that tries to do an action scene, to look at anything he does. So any of that stuff in Titanic is great. I just felt that the story was very thin, personally. Especially Billy Zane. I thought he was a very weak villain.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't the villain. The iceberg was the villain.
I guess.
He was like an obstacle thrown in their way, I call him. Because if you notice, they never really have a resolution between the two of them. She kind of says, you know, screw you, and runs off to save Jack. But that's about it.
I guess that's part of my issue, though. Oh, you know, because okay. there's such clearly drawn heroic characters, which I think works in their favor, in the film's favor. I don't know.
Maybe that's why people compare it to Gone with the Wind, because actually you can say the same thing about Gone with the Wind. There is no villain, really, in Gone with the Wind. It's just, it's the epic story of the backdrop.
That's true, I suppose. I don't know. The overarching story didn't hold together as well for me.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll be curious to see how long these re-release conversions continue to do well. I think the big like tentpole ones like Lion King, Beauty and the Beast were big ones. They're coming out with Finding Nemo. That'll do well. Mm-hmm. Titanic, I think, will get – and it's cost, what, $20, $30 million officially to do these conversions. So you're basically releasing a cheap movie. But, I mean, if they start pulling out, you know, Leonard Part 6 and converting that
– I would see that on the big screen in 3D. That sounds awesome. I would.
Just to say I had. I would get a t-shirt made. I wish that they would re-release movies like Jaws 3D in digital 3D.
Yeah, you'd have to do a lot of work to that, I think. I mean, the compositing, like that shot with the sub where you can see through it.
I mean, No. Just take the two prints and strike the digital print and that's it. No. Don't tinker with it. Just give me the digital print.
All right.
That's what I think they should do. Yeah, I
could dig that. Sure.
Yeah, like Friday the 13th Part 3, Amityville Horror 3. You know, get all those 3D movies.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. I'd be totally into that.
I'd love to see that, because that wouldn't cost that much money. You just need to have the two prints, and boom, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't even know if those prints exist.
Who knows?
I have a feeling that the Jaws 3D print has not been chosen for restoration by the American Film Institute.
Probably not. And I would imagine that Paramount probably has the Friday the 13th 3D print somewhere. They just either don't know where it is or just lazy and don't want to, you know,
they're like,
don't want to do
It's holding up a desk in the editing bay. We don't really want to move it.
It's really infuriating that they don't seem to understand how much the fans want really good editions of those films, especially like, you know, Part 4 with all the extra stuff or Part 7 with all the gore cut out. You know, I mean, Part 7 is good. It's not perfect. You know, all the Carrie special effects are laughably terrible, but I'd love to see all the makeup that they cut out. You know, there's some good work that went into that.
Yeah, I mean, you might have gotten more, because I remember when the reboot of Friday the 13th came out, mm-hmm. and they re-released Friday the 13th. It was funny. They re-released Friday the 13th. I think they did six of them.
Yeah, I got a couple DVD. Of those.
They did them on DVD, and then when the DVD of Friday the 13th came out, they re-released the Blu-rays. It's the same thing. But all they did was just re-release them. It's amazing how much they don't clean stuff up. I recently got a bunch of some Hitchcock movies, mm-hmm. like Notorious and Spellbound and Rebecca. And it was amazing how, and they even had like, oh, look at our feature. We had a featurette on restoration. And I'm like, all you did was clean up the dust. You didn't take care of the flicker, and you didn't take care of the bad contrast. And sometimes the film looked like it was burned a little bit. You know, they didn't fully restore them. They just cleaned them up.
Yeah, or as opposed to something like, you know, Clockwork Orange, which was like, I've been lucky enough to see it in 35 twice.
Yeah.
And the Blu-ray is the closest I've ever come to watching it in the theater. And I've seen that movie about 100 times. It was a remarkable transfer.
Yeah. It's real touchy, especially for those older movies. Once they got to the Blu-ray format, I think in DVD it wasn't so bad. But once you finally got people having high-def televisions in true 16:9 widescreen, and then you put them at 1080p, then they start having problems because they don't know how much to clean it up and how much grain to leave in. And there are movies that RoboCop. I got the RoboCop Blu-rays. And every now and then you see one of these shots and you're just like, oh my God, that shot's so grainy and bad. And I think it was just the way they were originally printed. The film was just printed and they didn't adjust it. And it's a toss-up, because you take out too much grain, it looks like the Predator Blu-ray.
Right.
If you leave too much in, people complain. But it's funny, I've seen a lot of inconsistencies, and I think that's just because, you know, the standards weren't up there in the 80s and the early 90s.
Yeah, well, it was tough, too. I know it was tough. I haven't seen the RoboCop one. Were any of the grainy shots like the rear projection or composited shots? Because that's gotten a lot better in the last...
No, it was in the warehouse when they first ran it. When Kurt Smith was shooting up Peter Weller.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's like one shot out of nowhere, and it's just like, oh my God, that looks terrible.
That's surprising.
It's sort of like that. It's like that shot in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels where they're using super slow mo on her shooting the gun, and it was so slow-mo and it didn't have enough light,
right?
And they had to balance it out, and that's kind of what this shot looked like. It was like the cinematographer was drunk that day and was like, oh hey, we didn't put enough light in here, so let's pump it up and post. And they didn't have digital transfers back in 1986 when that came out.
Yeah, that was 80. I'll say 87, I think. 86.
86, 87. Yeah. It was right around then. So.
Oh, I love that movie.
Anyways, let's talk about box office from this week. Chronicle won.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, like I said, I hated Chronicle. Did you see Chronicle?
I haven't. I really wanted to see it, actually. It looks pretty awesome.
84% of the critics are loving it. Yeah. I'm one of the 16% who doesn't. but all the other critics that don't give it like 2 out of 5 stars, I'm like zero. Sooked.
Wow, so you really didn't like it.
Oh, I hated it. And I'm not going to go into why I hated it and how much I hated it. You can listen to the second real episode if anyone really cares. But one of the things that pissed me off about the reporting is I hate when you have a weekend like the Super Bowl, when everyone tries to just shoehorn a pun into their headlines. Like Nikki Fink's headline was, "Chronicle tackles woman in black." On the weekend, I'm like, it made like $1 million more. That's hardly tackling. I mean, if it had like made 3 times as much, yeah. So, Woman in Black, I thought was a better movie, but
I'd like to see that. I mean, I'm a sucker for kind of moody, haunted house, ghost kind of films.
It's
Isn't
good.
That what that is?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. Well, and I said last week, it's better than any audience you're going to see it with, because the audience, you're just going to want to. It's a good thing they don't have real lightsabers, because I'd bring them into the theater and just start cutting people's hands off. Take off that cell phone.
Nice.
Yeah. Big Miracle did not do well at all.
Really?
It made less than $8 million. So.
Wow. What was the budget, do you know?
40.
Wow. They're going to be hard-pressed to make that back.
Well, it's Universal. When Universal fails, they love to just fail big.
Yeah.
And then The Gray made actually more than Big Miracle. And then he had the rest of everything in the 5 million range. Mm-hmm. So what do you think is going to win this weekend? This is an interesting weekend because there's a interesting variety of movies.
Can you run down the list of what's coming out this weekend?
Journey 2.
Yep.
Safe House.
Yep.
Star Wars.
Yep.
And The Vow.
I mean, Star Wars would seem to be the big, the big gun. I'd say probably Star Wars or Journey 2. I wouldn't be surprised if Safe House is one of those films that, if it's any good, has legs.
Yeah.
Over upcoming weeks, because it seems like early spring and late winter can be such a dead time that films that are any good sometimes tend to stick around a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised too if in the long run Journey is a huge hit, because family films tend to do not under the radar in terms of how much they make, but I told someone how much Alvin and the Chipmunks made, the first film, you know, when it came out, and they were just shocked. It's like, well, I mean, family films.
And the second one beat it, and the third one, even though it didn't start out of the gate as well, it did pretty well for itself.
I think they always make money. I think that's why. And the other thing too that I don't know if they always factor in with these estimates is box office is one thing, but so many of these films do so well on all the peripheral stuff or the secondary markets. Yeah. I mean, I know they're not doing as well as they used to, but I'd be shocked if they weren't making some money off of the DVDs and Blu-rays and VOD and all that. Even with all the piracy, they wouldn't be making the movies otherwise.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting with there's a part of me that wants to say Star Wars, but Star Wars isn't going to make $70 million this weekend or anything like that. I think Star Wars is going to do what a lot of these re-releases are doing, 25 to 30 million. I think it's got a good shot at that. Maybe it'll do more. Who knows? I'd love to see it do more, simply because then it's guaranteed that they're going to do the rest.
Yes, that's for sure.
I think it has a good shot. Journey 2, what's interesting about that one is the first movie made about a little more than $100 million. Journey 2's already made in the last week's $41 million overseas.
Really?
Which is really good for opening. Yeah, I was not expecting. When I saw the type of people in the type of crowd that they had at the not the type of people, but the type of crowd they had at the screening, there are a lot of little kids. So it is playing as a kid, and it is a kids movie. So it totally works on that level. But it also has that action adventure thing, which seems at the very least internationally doing very well.
Well, action adventures tend to translate very well overseas, especially with recognizable international stars. And, I mean, it's been marketed very well.
Yeah.
I want to see it. It looks awesome.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be one of these movies that has a good shot at winning. Safe House, I think, is a bigger struggle, because even though Denzel commands an audience, Ryan Reynolds doesn't. Ryan Reynolds is not an opener. For anyone, when people were saying when Green Lantern, they're like, oh, he didn't do that well. Green Lantern's his best opening.
Is it really?
Of any movie, I think. Well, I think Wolverine was a better opening, but he wasn't the star of that. I mean, if you talk movies that he headlined, yeah. His highest grossing movie, I think, is The Proposal.
Hmm.
But everything else, most of his movies gross 30, 40 million tops.
Yeah.
And it's rated R. Denzel's, yeah, he's got a draw, but I don't think he's as big of a draw. And it's a hard movie to say. I want to see the new Denzel movie, not I want to see the new movie about the guy in the CIA who's kind of in a safe house and then escapes.
Well, and like we were saying, I really have no idea what it's about. Like, the tone looks cool. I would see it because it seems like the style of film that I would enjoy.
Yeah.
But who knows? And I wouldn't be surprised if it does show some legs, if they start to refine the ad campaign,
yeah,
and the way they're representing it. And if they don't, then maybe they're shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, that's possible. So anyways, I think, and The Vow, but God, you do realize that it was Dear John that knocked Avatar off the top number one list.
Was it really?
Yeah, that was that movie's claim to fame. So, in The Vow, they haven't really had a romance kind of chick flick for a couple weeks, have they?
Not that I'm aware of. And as a matter of fact, in thinking about it, the same thing I said about family films, I think applies to these lower budget. I mean, I'd imagine The Vow is a lower budget film than Journey 2.
Yeah.
I would think.
I hope so.
You know,
well,
kind of chick
Journey
flicks.
2 was like 40 million, so.
Was it really?
It's, or 50 million maybe. It's
wow,
not.
Wow, that's awesome.
It was not. And I mean, it shows. It's not Avatar CGI, but it's. I mean, all this stuff's gotten very canned now, so you can do a lot with a little.
Well, I think that bodes very well for them. I mean, if they made almost all their whole budget back internationally, I mean, I think they're sitting on a good property.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I don't think that... I'm glancing at the last chick flick, arguably, was One for the Money that's even in the top 10. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't count.
No, and I would... I mean, this is a guess, so if you disagree, go for it. But I would think that some of the audience that would see some of the Oscar films would probably be an overlap with something like this. I know it's a different crowd, but...
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, so I would think that there would be people that are probably hungry for something a little different. Because like we said, I mean, part of what I don't like about the kind of modern scheduling of films is it's all very segmented. You never, very rarely see an Oscar film come out before September at the earliest. Yeah. I mean, Donnie Brasco came out, this was years ago, but it came out in May. And
The
that
Help
was,
came out in August.
What's that?
And
oh,
The
yeah,
Help
right.
came out in August. And that's the one. And, well, Tree of Life came out in June.
True. Okay, so maybe there are a couple buck in the trend.
They show up every now and then, but most of them, the bulk of your Oscar films, are all September on, and usually October and November.
Oh, yeah. And, sometimes even, just that Thanksgiving to New Year's thing, it really kind of bugs me. It's not that the film's necessarily bad. I mean, I think you get the same kind of spread you'd usually get. I think the fact that they've expanded the Best Picture nominations kind of dilutes a little bit. Some of those dramas last year that got nominated, like Animal Kingdom, it's like, really? This doesn't belong there,
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think, like, Journey to the Mysterious Island, they know they don't think Ghost of a Chance of winning anything. So that's why it goes in this category. But you're right. I think the people who like those heavy dramas are going to go see The Vow, because even though it's a romance, it's about a struggle and somebody recovering, so... I think that while it's being represented a little bit by the Oscar films, I still think people, there's an audience that will go for that. I don't know. It's a horse race. I wouldn't be surprised if you see four movies making $20 million this weekend. Chronicle will hold, but not, I mean, it made $22 million. So, I mean, it's probably good for in the low teens this week.
Yeah, so. I could see that doing very well on cable.
Yeah.
The kind of people that are like, oh, I wanted to see that. And then they're surfing around, or VOD or something. I could see that doing pretty well.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our predictions. Speaking of VOD, let's move on and talk a little bit about your movie.
Sure.
Drive-In Horror Show. Tell us a little bit about it. You sent me a copy, but so I know everything about it. Tell the audience about this little film.
So it's an anthology horror film. It's like Creepshow at a haunted drive-in in the post-post-apocalypse. There have been two apocalypses because one wasn't enough. As you can probably guess from the description, it is
two apocalypses for the price of one.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. And it's pretty cheap, too, in terms of the price of the drive-in.
Do you say two apocalypse? How do you...
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
What is the plural of apocalypse?
Apocalypse sounds right, like octopi or something.
Apocalypses?
Wow. I took Latin in high school, but I obviously didn't study the apocalypse stuff. So,
that's right. It's only $5.
Yeah, it is only $5 to watch the movie. In terms of the confines of the film, it's actually so a little more to buy the DVD, but it's only $10, so it's not that much.
That's not That's not a bad price for a DVD.
No, not at all. And it has tons of extra stuff. It has commentary, music videos. I don't know if the screener you got had the extra stuff.
I think it just had the trailer.
The real DVD has behind the scenes featurettes, a couple music videos, some Easter eggs, commentary, a whole bunch of stuff. So it's pretty good value. But anyway, it's an anthology film, like I mentioned. It runs the gamut in terms of style of film. There's one that's like a rape revenge, I Spit on Your Grave style film. There's one, it's a like a fairy tale, Tales from the Crypt, Tales from the Dark Side, A Boy with a Monster in His Closet. There's a body horror kind of story. A doctor that contracts this disease. It's a little more kind of tragic. It's like The Fly in about 20 minutes is probably the best way to describe it.
Well, you definitely have the homage to The Fly with the fingernails.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, The Fly is one of my favorite films of all time. I have a soft spot for films that managed to combine horror and gore with tragedy. I think they fit together very well. Oh, yeah. And Cronenberg is very talented at that. And then there's The Meat Man, which is like a urban legend story about two kids that think that their father might be a cannibal killer, even though he sells vacuums for his real job. And then the last is about every slasher you've ever seen in the woods, boiled down to about 25 minutes. It's definitely embraces the slasher formula. And it's all hosted by these undead creatures. There's a projectionist, there's a troll that runs the projector, there's a zombie that takes tickets and all that. All that stuff is very tongue-in-cheek, very much like the kind of classic horror hosts, you know, Elvira or Vincent Price or the Crypt Keeper, stuff like that.
Yeah, and then they also have who's it? The Chainsaw Horror Girl.
The teenage axe victim.
Yeah. Now, there's one issue I do have to bring up: where were the boobs in this movie? That's my question.
That is a good question. That's something we realized kind of near the end that we had missed. And if we do another drive-in horror show, we actually have another 11 stories written. We could do two films or a TV series or something. We can definitely work some boobs in there. We missed out, so that's a very legitimate.
That's my requirement for the next one is you need boobs.
I am completely fine with that.
Would you come out with it if you do another one? I will provide you with a box quote cover, box cover quote that says yes, as good as the first one, but with boobs.
I think that's fantastic. I would be honored.
So you sent me a copy and I had a chance to check it out. I was telling you this off the air and, there's a lot of people, and this is for the audience to know, there's a lot of people out there running around going, oh, I like independent film. And I go, well, Pulp Fiction doesn't count. You know, that's not independent. I mean, yeah, technically it was made outside of the studio system and then acquired. But there's a lot of independent films. There's a lot of just grassroots, a couple people with a video camera shooting their own movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking found footage stuff. I'm talking about them shooting their own movie. And not all of it's good. And so when I get somebody who's when I get publicists from 20th Century Fox sending me, hey, do you want to look at this? It's a crapshoot whether I'm going to like that.
Right.
You know. So if I get independent filmmakers, and occasionally they'll be like, hey, would you look at my film? A lot of times I don't have time, but it's always worrisome, and I got it. And I have to say, I did enjoy this movie. I love anthology movies, anyways, because if you don't like one of the stories, you got another two or three or four.
Yeah, that's
coming
right.
Down the pike, and It is. I mean, very rarely do anthology stories movies have the exact same tone for everything. Mm-hmm. So you've got that option. And then I love marathon movies. And I mentioned to you it's similar to Chillerama in the sense that Chillerama takes place in a drive-in, and they had these. It was an anthology horror film. But that's good because I think they're very different movies. I mean, there's comparisons to be made, but theirs was much more of a spoof of the genres.
Yeah, there's very goofy, which I think works for them.
Yeah, and yours is much more straight telling the horror stories.
Yep.
And one of the things I loved about this movie that I really, really got into, I had been watching last weekend after we did our live tweet of Species. No, we didn't do Species. What did we do last week? Did we do Species? Maybe we did do Species last week. Yeah, it was Species last week, where we get together. You know what the live tweets are, don't you? Have you heard me talk about those?
I don't think I have.
Every Saturday night at 11 o'clock Eastern, a bunch of people on Twitter put in the same movie or stream it off of Netflix, and we start it at the same time, and we tweet about it.
That's a great idea.
It is a lot of fun. This week we're watching The Rock with it's a Nicolas Cage run because we're doing The Rock. We did Snake Eyes last week. We did Snake Eyes where Cage starts at 11 in that movie. He's full Cage from the front.
Yeah, I remember that movie.
So we did Snake Eyes. We're doing The Rock this week. Then next week we're going to do Ghost Rider, of course, in honor of the new Ghost Rider movie.
Of course.
So, yeah, join in. Anybody can join in. It's a lot of fun. And so after Snake Eyes, I pulled up Creepshow 2, which is on Netflix instant. And I love the first Creepshow. The Creepshow 2's not nearly as good. But I watched a couple episodes, and then I was searching online about Tales from the Dark Side. And I remember watching that show, and it was cheesy, and it was low budget and kind of at times somewhat crappy. But I remember watching that in the 80s, and it was a lot of fun, late night, catch it, syndicated. And I actually reserved a disc from Netflix for Tales from the Dark Side, the series. And the three stories in the middle, the ones, it's The Closet, was it Falling Apart? Is that the name?
Yeah, Fall Apart.
Fall Apart and The Meat Man?
Yep.
Those three really have a Tales from the Dark Side feel to it.
Oh, thanks.
In a very warm, remember the 80s kind of way. and it's low budget, and I mean, because it is. But I'll tell you, it doesn't look any lower budget than Tales from the Dark Side did.
Well, thanks. And that was very much our intent. I don't know that, and I say we, this Greg Anson, who was a producer on the film, we both wrote it together. We basically made it together. I'm listed as director, and I did the directing duties, but in terms of who created the film and the overall vision, it was the two of us. Yeah. And we're both products of the 80s. You know, that's where we grew up. And I think that's just kind of what we did. I don't know if we thought about it in that way, mm-hmm. except for The Watcher, which is like, well, let's do a Friday the 13th film from like when we grew up. But
yeah,
it's just kind of how it happened. So I'm really glad that resonated with you because it's an organic thing, which is kind of cool.
It didn't feel like your standard independent film. And that's refreshing. There's a lot of independent films that they just feel like that independent film. You feel like that thing, you know, and I thought it rose above it. So, congratulations. It's a good movie. I suggest people to check it out. Support independent films, support independent horror. There aren't any boobs, but don't worry. No. Part two will have boobs.
And I'd also like to ask, you know, please help spread the word. You know, we are an independent film. We're out on a label, so you know, we've, you know, reached a certain level in terms of people seeing it and being on Amazon and all that kind of stuff. And, which is great, but we're an independent film. And in terms of, you know, we depend on a lot of grassroots, publicity. So some of the best things that you guys can do in terms of actually, in addition to actually seeing the film, is to tell other people about it. It's really worth a lot. And, you know, send us a tweet. You know, we're on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. We respond mm-hmm. to people. We love talking to our fans. And
yeah, I liked your page when I was watching it last night.
Oh, thanks.
what's the website for it? Do you have a website for the movie, or just do you go to the website for the production, the distributor?
No, we have a very large and extensive website for the movie. It's called driveinhorrorshow.com. Okay. It has a filmmaking blog where we basically help anybody that wants to make their own independent film. I also do some writing for the Boston Phoenix, which is one of the leading and oldest independent newspapers in the country, and like alternative newspaper basically. And yeah. I've done tons of podcasts as a guest, and those are all on there too, and Great. Other things. So it's a lot of stuff there if you're curious. So and you can also buy the movie there.
Yes, do that. So yes, check out Drive-In Horror Show. Lots of fun. It's a great time. Let's move on to the next thing on the schedule. We have a listener question. This is from our good friend Thomas from Seattle, and I'm just going to go ahead and read it aloud because it's a relatively succinct question. And he says, "Which franchise has the best roster of directors? I recently saw Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, and was again greatly impressed by Brad Bird, probably the only director working today with a perfect track record." That's true.
Yeah, he's awesome.
The first three movies were directed by Brian De Palma, then John Woo, then J.J. Abrams, and that's quite a list. So I guess the question is, which franchise do you think has the best directors out there, or has the best even just track record of directors?
I came up with 1 and 1A, I think. I'll read you 1A first.
Okay.
The first thing that occurred to me was the Hannibal Lecter films, because you have Michael Mann, who did Manhunter, Jonathan Demme, I guess he's a little more of a French guy, Silence of the Lambs, and Ridley Scott, who did Hannibal. He's a powerhouse, of course. Yeah. But
You forgot Hannibal Rising, or are we just kind of shoving that under the rug right
now? I never saw it. I don't know anything else the director's done, so I can't really call it a legacy kind of director.
Well, the thing is, I don't think you could really put that in the same wheelhouse as the rest of the movies, because it was such a fringe release anyways. It was just sort of, you know, farted out there in the middle of a weird time, and nobody saw it.
Yeah.
It got no publicity.
Yeah, no, I didn't. So, but then I was thinking, and one hit me. It's like, oh, duh, the Alien films.
Okay.
You know, Ridley Scott did Alien. James Cameron did Aliens. Doesn't get much bigger than him. David Fincher did Alien 3. And Jean-Pierre Jeunet did Alien 4. And he was the man responsible for Amelie, A Very Long Engagement, Delicatessen, and City of Lost Children, which is one of my favorite films of all time. I mean, he flies under the radar a little bit, but go back and watch his films. He has a very singular vision. Alien Resurrection, it's not his best film, but his other films are amazing. I think if you're looking at it as a whole, in terms of directors, kind of careers, I think he belongs there.
Yeah. Well, and then you also, I'll throw in, you had Paul W.S. Anderson.
That's right.
Doing Alien versus Predator, and then the Strauss brothers doing Alien versus Predator Requiem, which I liked both of those.
Actually haven't seen either of them. I saw the end of the first one on the ice battle, whatever that was. But
oh yeah, they're bad, but I enjoy them. You know,
and nothing wrong with enjoying a bad movie. Otherwise, I wouldn't watch any movies. You know.
Yeah, you know what's the thing is? It's interesting to say. I really think that I don't know if I'd be hard pressed to point out a better roster of directors doing four movies in a row. I mean, this has taken 15 years to do them, but four movies in succession that have gotten better as they've gone on. And I think that Brian De Palma's Mission Impossible is the weakest of the bunch, but it's still an entertaining film. And then John Woo did a great job. Arguably, sometimes some of the best films that they've done. What's weird is, if I think franchises, the ones that I think have a solid consistency that's either maintained or gone up over the years usually involve the same director.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw out the Indiana Jones movies. I know a lot of people bitch about the last one, but even if you just look at the first three, Steven Spielberg, boom, boom, boom. I don't know of anybody else who could have directed any of the Indiana Jones movies and had them still feel like an Indiana Jones movies. Cause sometimes you get movies that are directed by somebody else, and then they're just so wildly different, They don't feel quite right.
Definitely. Yeah. I think the same can be said for the Lethal Weapon films, which are all, the director's name
Richard
escaped
Donner.
Me at the moment.
Richard
Donner. They're all, they don't necessarily get any better, but they're all pretty good. The first two are awesome. Yeah. And they all feel like the same film. They're the same.
Because even the Alien movies, I think, go down in quality.
Yeah, I think so. Actually, I'd say Resurrection better than Alien 3, but yes, yeah. I agree.
Yeah, and I mean, but usually when you get franchises, your heart, forget a good roster of directors, you're hard-pressed to find a franchise that doesn't just go to shit by part three. I mean, it's really tough to. Superman, the first Batman run in the 80s. I mean, you've got RoboCop.
Oh, yeah, don't. Yeah, that's
Planet of the Apes. There's a lot of movies. And unless there's that singular vision, like you can take Lucas with the Star Wars movies, you know, forget the prequels for a second, but, you know, Star Wars, Empire and Jedi, even though he didn't direct those directors kind of went on to nothing much.
Right.
I mean, Irvin Kershner had his mild, some decent movies. But that's basically Lucas's vision. And, yeah. You know, The Lord of the Rings, that's all Peter Jackson. You know, I mean, so it's really rare to find movies that just don't deteriorate as they go on. Maybe the James Bond movies, but then again, those aren't director movies.
Yeah, and actually, I looked at those when I was thinking about this. And it's also, that has such a long kind of up and down history.
Yeah.
It's tough. And those are also... Those are, like you said, they're focused on Bond. You know, the Wikipedia entry is actually organized by who played Bond, you know, in a chart in addition to the directors. So it's a little different, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the directors, there's very few directors that then go on. A lot of times the directors just kind of go on to obscurity.
Yeah.
Outside of it. So, yeah, I would think Mission Impossible is probably one of those few that gets to part four and it's still pretty good.
I think it's a great fantastic. Question. A great list. This is awesome.
Yeah, definitely. So there you go. There's your answer, Thomas from Seattle. Very roundabout and rambling. But
yes.
That's what we're going to do.
Yes.
Next up is the Fat Guy 5. And this is in honor of, and now after seeing it, I have to say, not only in honor of Star Wars Episode 1, but also in honor of Journey to the Mysterious Island. These are our five favorite movies that are absolute crap.
Yeah,
these are movies we know they shit. They're absolute crap, but we love them anyways. And I'm going to start off the Star Wars prequels, because even though I don't like the name, if it inspires a list, I don't like to put it on. But there's two more of them, and I know Obi-Wan Kenobi goes to a diner in part two, but I love part two. It's terrible, but I loved it. And part three, I absolutely loved it. It makes no sense. And the acting is just off the charts bad, but I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, so, hey, man, you know.
Guilty pleasure.
Yeah, nothing wrong with guilty pleasures, for sure.
What's yours next entry in the list?
I have a film called Island of Death.
I've never heard of this.
Which is basically this director, his name escapes me, he didn't do that much, he did a lot of softcore after this. This was in 77, he looked at Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which had come out years earlier, and said, that made a bunch of money. I'm making really screwed up things. I can make something sicker than that. So he made this film with, you know, it has golden showers and bestiality and all these.
How do I not know of this movie? That's what I want to know.
Well, it's awesome. It was on the Video Nasties list.
Oh,
it was it? You know, which are the films that were banned in Britain during the 80s. And it's, oh, God, what else? It's got all sorts of stuff in it. You know, really hardcore violence, rape, crucifixion, all this sorts of stuff. And it's this couple that basically get off on killing people and then, you know, like getting each other off while they look at the pictures of it and stuff. But the thing is, it sounds really hardcore, but it's so ineptly made that it's hysterical.
Goofy?
What's that?
Is it goofy? Is it like weird and goofy?
Oh, completely. It's just the guy clearly didn't really know what he was doing. And it's so unintentionally entertaining for all these kind of all the wrong reasons. And so if you have a really pretty decent stomach for this kind of thing, you won't be disturbed whatsoever. You'll just be guffawing. So
is it kind of like the original Last House on the Left, which I've seen, and it's you know, it's unpleasant because it's got the rape and it's got murder and it's got mutilation, but it's so just goofy and strange.
It's way worse than that. I mean, I like Last House on the Left. I do find it pretty disturbing, but I completely understand where you're coming from with that. I mean, this just has no
Or like Cannibal Holocaust, which is just these ridiculous juxtapositions of this weird, you know, after-school special 70s music.
Yeah.
And then them killing a sea turtle kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, nowhere even near that level of confidence. It's just, it's so inept. And I love it. I absolutely love it. It's worth getting. There's a pretty good DVD out there of it. And I love the guy. The guy basically said, yeah, I'm making a cash-in. And then when he found out people were bootlegging it because they couldn't buy it, he made his own version. He wasn't mad. He's like, oh, I want to get paid for this. So
that's awesome.
I love that. I think that's very respectable, honestly.
You know what's funny? This was reviewed by Film School Rejects' Rob Hunter on Film School Rejects. Mm-hmm. And it's they've got a Region 2 UK DVD. American UK American DVD is not available. Mm-hmm. This is, let me just read the headline of Rob's review. Rob was on a couple weeks ago. Fans will remember. Island of Death is awesome, terrible, and hilarious in equal measure.
Yeah, pretty much.
Does that sound accurate to you?
Oh yeah, it's totally awesome. I mean, if you have a decent stomach for this stuff, you're gonna love it. It's just wonderful. I can't say enough good things about this movie.
Well, from that, we're going to lead on to another film. I guess very similar. G-Force.
Completely.
This is, of course, the guinea pig spy movie that Disney made 3 or 4 years ago. And it has Zach Galifianakis as the guy who creates him, and the adorable Kelly Martin's in the movie before she kind of became a little more famous for some TV roles. Mm-hmm. And, not Kelly Martin, Kelly Gardner, cute little blonde. And Sam Rockwell does the voice of one of them, and Penelope Cruz and Tracy Morgan, who I hate, but this is a ridiculous, ridiculous movie about guinea pig spies and secret agents. And it was in 3D, and I took my kids, and I fucking loved every goddamn minute of this movie, because it runs 80 minutes long, and it's done.
Nice.
And the thing is, It's completely a kid's movie, and you just kind of have to check your brain out. And I've gotten more shit recently. This is the DVD movie I get more shit for liking. Whereas people when they see me not like a movie on Rotten Tomatoes, they'll look at my history and they'll be like, "He looked G-Force. He's an idiot." You know,
right? Of course.
But it's like I remember saying the movie Bolt. If the first 10 minutes of Bolt. If they made a whole movie of that, I would love it. Then you realize he's just an actor. I'm just like, eh. But the crazy super spy dog, I wanted to see that movie. That's what this is, only it's with the guinea pigs.
Cool.
And it's so stupid, but I freaking loved it.
I'll check it out. I mean, I'll see anything once. I just heard it was terrible, but I have a big soft spot for awesomely terrible movies.
Oh, yeah. It's not good. But I mean, also, I took my kids. And it's the same reason why I like the Alvin and the Chipmunk movies.
Right.
I can take it. My kids love them. And that's probably, I think, part of the reason why I like Journey to the Mysterious Island. Anyways, what's the next one for you?
Next one for me is Mac and Me, which, yes, if you've never seen it, is just awesome. It basically started with a 5-minute McDonald's commercial. And
it is an unapologetic commercial for McDonald's.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I've never seen product placement worked more into a film's plot, maybe with the exception of Castaway, where, his best friend is a Wilson, volleyball, but or soccer ball, whatever he was.
Volleyball.
But it's just, it's unbelievable. It's this really cheap ripoff of E.T. I mean, the special effects are just laughably bad. They work in this thing like his... E.T.'s, or the Max, it's called Mac after McDonald's, get it? And Mac's parents do this this thing with their hands. It looks like the Valvoline logo. They hold their hands up in front of Valvoline.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, Google, or pop the name into YouTube and watch anything that comes up.
The great scene is there's a scene where they go to McDonald's. There's no reasoning behind this, but they go to McDonald's and there's this big song and dance number.
Yes, they're dancing on the tables, and it's
obviously... And they don't... It's not a musical. It's not like, you have a musical and people are singing all the time and it makes sense, but it'd be like dropping a musical number in the middle of Schindler's List, where you'd be like, whoa, hold on a second.
Yeah, it's weird. And something's up when they go to McDonald's and they show... they show the arches and all this stuff, and then they go in and Ronald McDonald is there.
He's there,
making sure all the kids have a good time. It's awful. It's great. It's just such a ridiculous movie. I haven't actually seen it in a couple of years. I have it on VHS. A friend of mine who was a 16mm collector showed it to me years ago. It was that and...
Prince exists of this movie is what you're saying.
Pretty much. What was it? It was that and Dress to Kill on a double feature.
Oh, wow.
That he set up, which is one of the weirdest double features I've ever seen, but it was awesome.
We actually live tweeted Mac and Me about a year and a half ago.
Oh, really? Oh, excellent.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun because there's a lot of people who'd never seen it. I'd never seen it before that.
Oh, that's
a
treat.
Yeah, it's out there.
Oh, yeah, to say the least.
It's, It is like they said, let's rip off E.T., but we're going to get people who are completely high on drugs.
Yeah.
To write the movie, but they're not going to make a drug movie. They're going to seriously try to make a good movie, but they're just going to be whopped out on drugs.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah. And not the good kind of creative drugs.
No.
You know. Yeah, that movie's just a mess.
Yeah. So, yeah, that one's then the last one I have to say is just pretty much anything by Rennie Harlan. Who is like, he's one of those directors. He's up there with Paul W.S. Anderson for me, although there's been a couple movies that Paul W.S. Anderson has done that I really didn't like. And like, I haven't seen Driven by Rennie Harlan because mm-hmm. even I couldn't bring myself to see that. But pretty much anything that Rennie Harlan does is absolute total shit, but I will watch it. And at the end, I'll be like, I had fun.
I think Blue Sea is a great example of that. I love that. And that's actually fairly competently made, I gotta say.
That was back when he was making theatrical features.
Yeah. Is he doing straight to DVD now?
Well, he hit these levels where he was doing stuff, because he did like Cliffhanger, which is a good movie.
And yeah, Cliffhanger.
Die
cool.
Hard. He did Die Hard 2. He was going to be the Finnish Spielberg or something like that.
Right.
And then he did, and those were like legitimately good movies. But then he did stuff like The Long Kiss Goodnight and Cutthroat Island,
yep.
which were not considered good movies, but they're a lot of fun, and I love the hell out of both of them. Cutthroat Island, I think, holds one of the it's most notable for being one of the highest, one of the biggest risk to return losses studio has overcome has had. And then he did movies. Then he started doing stuff that were getting smaller releases, like Mindhunters, which still isn't a bad little movie. And then he did 12 Rounds with John Cena, like 4 or 5 years ago. And he's kind of gone back to direct to DVD stuff. He's kind of like Joel Schumacher, who originally had
still around.
Well, yeah, Schumacher had a legitimately big career at one point.
Oh yeah,
and he's doing direct to DVD stuff now.
Wow.
And then you have an honorable mention you want to throw in there.
I do. Shark Attack 3 Megalodon is just, it's like a perfect storm of awfulness.
Now what is that about?
Yeah, I know, as if you can't tell, you know. Have you seen it?
No, I have not. I have not had the pleasure.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's like they didn't even try. You know, they mix stock footage of all these different sharks to try to make it seem as though, you know, there's sharks in the water. And you don't even have to be an expert to spot it. It's like all of a sudden it's grainy and blue, and then it's crisp and
then it's a hammerhead.
Right, exactly. Here's one scene that sums up the whole movie and what makes it wonderful. In addition, there's a woman in it who's had so much Botox she can't emote. Like, she can barely open her mouth. It's awesome.
Right. Is this the one with Casper Van Dien?
No, that's Shark Attack 1.
Oh, okay.
Which
does it hold up?
Sure, I don't know. I saw it 15 years ago. But no, there's a scene in it where there's this couple down on a pier. It's like a Santa Monica Pier kind of thing. And you've never seen them before. They just wander into the film with no explanation. And there's a water slide that goes into the water off the pier, which is a little weird. And they decide that they're going to do this. It's going to be awesome. So they go down the water slide, and at the very bottom, a great white shark is waiting with its mouth open, and they slide right in.
Well, that's smart of the shark. I mean, people just come right into your mouth, and they can't get away.
Nope, he's just hanging out. So seriously, if you like bad movies, it's awesome. And don't read anything about it. There is one line of dialogue in particular that if you don't know it's coming is just sensational. You don't want someone to ruin that for you. So if you like bad movies, it's one of my favorites.
I'm searching these right now. I'm looking at them on Netflix to see if they're available.
Oh yeah, I think Shark Attack 3 is.
Shark Attack 3 is on Instant.
Even better.
That is going into my queue right now.
Oh yes.
So and guess what came up is they say more. Do you like Shark Attack 3? You should try this. Deep Blue Sea.
Nice.
Right there. And then, like, for some reason, the Dragon Tattoo trilogy is on that list as well. I don't quite know why.
That's weird.
Okay. They don't rape the shark, do they?
Not that I'm aware of, but maybe in between takes. It was also filmed, I think, in Serbia or something. You know, they film a lot of those cheap films over in, you know, Eastern Europe to save money. And so all the actors have these really weird accents, and you know, I think it's the reason why the Santa Monica Pier doesn't look quite right. It's very strange.
The reason there's a nuclear power plant in the background.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute. Right, I don't exactly. see LA anywhere in this picture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the slide's made of, like, cereal and, you know, stuff like that.
That's great. I am totally going to watch this movie.
Yeah, please do. It's awesome.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to go. Welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are back on the radio. How are you guys doing out there in Cheyenne, Wyoming? And elsewhere in Wyoming, because you can hear, I believe you can hear this. You can hear KGAB down in Colorado
cool.
as well. You know, maybe not you probably not in the mountains, but just over the border. So yeah, how are you doing back there? We are back from the middle segment. Go back and check out the middle segment because it is a great discussion of bad movies. We talk about some really nice movie series. We answer listener voicemail or listener email, and we talk about Michael's movie, Drive-In Horror Show, which we'll drop that website on where you can get more information on that at the end as well. But right now, what do we got coming up here, Michael?
It is time for the world-famous DVD Roundup. Did I say that right?
You did. You were perfect. You were awesome.
Oh, thank you. Brilliant. I forgot to write it down. And
you get a gold star.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'll mail it to you. Anyways... What are your DVD picks for this week?
So my DVD picks, I have the Casino Royale. This is the original Casino Royale, which is just this giant mess of a movie. It's really fun. It was kind of made as a spoof.
Is it David Niven? Is David Niven in that one?
Yes, David Niven is in it. There's a bunch of people that played James Bond, including Woody Allen and Peter Sellers.
Yes.
It's really, really weird. It was directed by... it has six people listed on IMDb. Yeah. I think it was one of those that was supposed to be a parody and just kept on getting bigger and bigger and weirder, and every director adding their own stamp. It's really weird.
It's one of those. What's funny about Casino Royale, that original one, is nothing like the one with James Bond, Daniel Craig.
No, from not a couple even years. Close.
Completely different. It's one that is so steeped in the 60s. I'm not a big fan of 60s movies. It is so 60s.
Yes, very.
That it's very hard to watch. It's very hard to relate to it outside of that decade.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you're not on acid, I think it's not going to make any sense.
Yeah. What else do you got?
I have The Deadly Spawn. It comes out from Synapse Films on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. It's a special edition. I haven't seen it. It has a huge cult following. It's like worm-like creatures that, you know, take on these people in a house, and it's all, you know, this group of teenagers and stuff, and it's just very campy and disgusting, apparently.
Awesome.
All new, digitally remastered, two audio commentaries, etc. One of those films, it's a cult film that got a great treatment, which is always nice to see.
Awesome. And then the last one you've got is...
The Lady and the Tramp, 3-disc Diamond Edition, Blu-ray, DVD, and digital copy. I mean, you're talking about one of the great animated films of all time. And
love story. One of the best love stories ever put to film.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. And, you know, you're getting the DVD, Blu-ray, and digital copy. There are a bunch of deleted scenes and extras. And I haven't seen it, but I would be shocked if Disney didn't do a marvelous job on it. And they put so much detail into those films, especially this is a golden era film, 1955. And you know that... You know, Walt Disney was pouring everything into this like he always did. So
it was a very much a passion project for Disney. In fact, the town that Lady comes from is based on where he grew up.
Is that right? Tell.
It definitely has Disney's stamp on this one. And they came out with the DVD, 7 or 8 years ago, where they did a Diamond Edition DVD before Blu-ray.
Uh-huh.
And that was fantastic. So they've imported all those special features, but you get the high-def transfer. And it looks gorgeous. It's a great disc. I get it because they always pull these back in the vault. And it will come out again in another 10 years. But get it if you don't have it in your library. Get it because it also comes with the DVD, so you can play it in the car or whatever.
Yeah,
so
awesome.
Definitely worth checking out. A couple other ones I want to point out is Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas, or not 3D Christmas. It's not Christmas, but you know what? It's Harold and Kumar. It's a great movie. It is funny. It's probably one of the best Christmas movies I've seen in a long time, actually.
Nice.
It's funny. I did a drinking game for Film School Rejects, so you can go to Film School Rejects. And I mean, why else? What other movie would you do a drinking game for?
Right.
There's also Anonymous, which is the Shakespeare movie, which is okay. You got to have to really understand Elizabethan history to understand. I mean, because otherwise it gets really convoluted. There's Project Nim, which is a award-winning documentary. Might want to check out. That is about a chimpanzee in the 70s. Mm. Then there's another one, last one I kind of want to mention. It's called Elephant in the Living Room, and it's about people who own exotic animals. And being from Columbus, not only does this part of it take place about an hour from where I live, but earlier this year, or late last year, there was wild animals that escaped from a preserve, or somebody just let them out on the other side of the city, and there were like lions and tigers and bears running around that they had to go put down. So it's an interesting, eye-opening look at exotic animal ownership. The stinker of the week is Fred 2, Night of the Living Fred. Why? Because it's Fred Finkelhorn from the. If you don't know who he is, Google him, and then you can shoot yourself in the face with a shotgun. Review wrap up: Journey 2. I said rocked. It was a lot of fun. Safe House and The Vow. We don't know. I didn't get a chance to see those. Star Wars then gets a total rock because I can't wait to see it. Next week we're doing Ghost Rider 2, The Secret World of Aridity. I don't know how to say that. And This Means War. We've got about 45 seconds left. I want to give you a little bit of time here, Michael, to thank you for coming on the show. Great to have you. We'll have you on again. And tell us again about who you are, where you're from, and where to get your DVD.
Yes, so you can get Drive-In Horror Show on DVD. It's also available on VOD.com. You can rent it for $3, I believe. And it's all at driveinhorrorshow.com. And you can also find Infinite Santa web series, Santa Killing Mutants in the Year 8000, at infinitesanta.com. And thank you very much for having me.
Oh, it was awesome. Thank you again. And another great new guest on Fat Guys in the Movies. We will let you guys ride out to the sunset and listen to my rant about Chronicle on the Fat Guys Network. You can go check that out now. Have a good night.
Bye.